This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance. Helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hello and welcome to Savor, production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about breakfast cereals.
Oh, I love breakfast cereals. Oh my gosh.
This emotional reaction is exactly what this episode is all about. And I love it so hard. Because I think they're fine. But you have this look on your face that even thinking about these products is just a state of bliss.
Yes, yes. And I think also in this is I live by myself. And so having milk around, I don't really drink milk. So I just don't have it around, which means I don't really have cereal anymore. And at our office, I frequently think about how there's a lot of cereal there, but we're not going there anymore. And sometimes I consider, is it worth trekking out there to take some cereal for my own? Is it still good? Oh
wow. Man.
Yes,
well,
yes.
Okay, if I do make it over there and I do a delivery for you, I will totally bring you some cereal.
Okay.
If such still exists. I know that we've, I know that our team has made some donations to food banks of stuff that was in our pantries, so.
Yes. Well, I'm assuming, and I'm happy to hope that the unopened boxes went to that. But I don't say no to open boxes. I don't have qualms. I think I've said before on the show, when I was a college student, my dinner was usually a buffet of just cereals.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And occasionally fries for the ketchup. Healthy, healthy, healthy. And when I was a kid, we didn't really have it for breakfast. It was a dessert item.
Okay.
Yeah, which I loved. And my favorites, Cinnamon Toast Crunch. That's my absolute favorite.
All right.
But also a big fan of Cap'n Crunch. Cap'n. Honey Bunches of Oats with the almonds.
All right.
Lucky Charms, Honey Nut Cheerios, and Apple Jacks. And in my house, we had to fight over who got to choose the cereal. And I remember my brothers both loved Corn Pops. And I just thought that was the weirdest thing. Like, they're fine, but you're telling me you're going to choose Corn Pops over Cinnamon Toast Crunch? Get out of my house! Anyway.
I present no argument. This is clearly something you feel strongly about, and I encourage you to do so.
Thank you. Oddly enough, we did used to get Reese's Puffs towards the end, and I refused to eat them because I thought they were too sweet. But I love Reese's, and I love cereal. But I don't know. Hmm. Too much was going on there, I guess.
Okay.
I did have a Cookie Crisp board game, which was very fun. It had a motorized, like, long, because the Cookie Crisp mascot is like that chef. And he had these long arms that would spin around, and you had to try to get the Cookie Crisp without getting hit by the arms.
Oh.
Yeah.
That sounds frightening, but
all right. It was pretty intense, yeah. And a friend of mine always got the knockoff brands, and the knockoff brands, like, no shade to them at all, because I've done a taste test where I couldn't really tell the difference between them.
Okay.
But yeah, the names of them made me laugh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They're quite funny. I wish I could remember. There's like Honey Smacks, but they're the name for Honey Smacks. It's the knockoff brand. Used to make me laugh a lot. And also, the donut. You remember the donut, Lauren?
The donut?
Yes. So when we got the idea for the show, originally we were in Austin, Texas.
And one night, the donut.
Yes. Yes. One night we went super late to Voodoo Donuts. And I was like the biggest whiner that we have to get the Cap'n Crunch donut. I was adamant. And we got a bunch of them, but that was the one that I was super excited about. And we bring them back to the house, and there were about five of us there, including Caroline of Unladylike, the podcast, and past host of Stuff Mom Never Told You. And I remember going excitedly to open the donut box, realizing the Cap'n Crunch donut was missing, looking up, and there was Caroline. And you know what? She was eating it, and the biggest thing about it was she said it wasn't even, she didn't make an impression on her. She didn't even care. But anyway, I was so upset. And then you, Lauren, one night, you, like, magically, because it was kind of a drunken evening, and you presented me with one of these donuts, and it was the best thing.
Oh, yeah, we were in Atlanta. We weren't anywhere near Voodoo Donuts branch, so it must have seemed very fae-like and magical, yeah. But
it was, like, months later, maybe longer than that, and
yeah,
I
think, like, a full year, yeah. My friend Bridget, who travels frequently for work, had gone to Austin and had discovered that if you arrive at a branch of Voodoo Donuts, or at the time, I'm not sure what is going on due to COVID right now, but at the time, if you arrived near shift change, they were trying to cycle all of their stock. And so she came home to Atlanta with these, like, 5-gallon buckets filled with Voodoo Donuts. Which is just what they'll give you for like, not a lot of dollars. Like, they're just like, yeah, just give us, like, $10 and take this bucket. Just take as many donuts as you can off of our hands. And so she did. And I specifically went and picked some up because I was like, I need to get this kind of crunch donut for Annie.
It's very important. And it was, I remember, like, just feeling so, this cannot be. And indeed, it was delicious. So thank you, Lauren. Oh. I still remember it.
You're very welcome. I'm glad to make at least one or two of your donut dreams come true.
Yes. A wrong was righted that day.
Oh, gosh. When I was a kid, my dad wouldn't let me have, like junk cereals, like anything with that much sweetener or like fruit flavoring or chocolate flavoring. But the two that he did allow were, like, Frosted Mini Wheats and Honey Nut Cheerios. And I'm pretty sure that those aren't less egregious, like, if you read the labels. So who knows? I don't know. Strangely enough, perhaps the cereal that I have the most nostalgia for is just a bowl of plain Rice Krispies with a sliced banana. That's a thing that I would get at my frequently aforementioned grandparents' house when I would go and visit during the summer when I was a kid.
That's a pretty healthy take on that cereal. I know I've mentioned it before, but one of my favorite things about Rice Krispie treats is that in theory it has less sugar, but like everyone I know would just get like a not a spoonful, but like one of those whole fourth cups of sugar
and put it in there. Yeah. Yeah.
We found a way.
Yeah, we sugar does find a way. It's true. Mm-hmm. another thing that I always associate with cereal now is in a previous employment life, I was an editor of fiction and a copy editor for medical journals, stuff like that. And my dear friend Adam P. Nave wrote this novel about three cartoon cereal mascots like road tripping through the multiverse to find their lost friend and themselves. And I think it's like the second thing I ever edited for money. So it holds a very dear place in my heart, aside from just enjoying it. The characters were Wereberry, the strawberry werewolf, mm-hmm. Choco Raw, the chocolate mummy, and the creature from the Fruit Lagoon.
Oh, mm-hmm. That's excellent.
It's the book is called Stays Crunchy in Milk, and please don't at me about all of the superfluous commas that I edited in there should you happen to read it, but do look up Adam P. Naves, Knave, his comics and novels if you're looking for something to read. His recent stuff is real aces, extra aces. I am biased because I still do editing for his novels, so I feel very, very close to him. But
I mean, that sounds like something up our listeners' alley.
Yeah. Yeah. Not all of them are about food.
Well, it's a good entry point, at least. Mm-hmm. I am certainly curious about many of the mascots in the cereal world.
Oh.
Similarly to Kool-Aid Man, I got some questions.
Oh, my heck. Yes. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, here in the United States, National Cereal Day is March 7th.
Huh. All right.
Yep. Good a time as any.
Yeah, sure. And recommended extra listening if you haven't listened to it or want to re-listen. See our graham cracker episode, one where I got, I wouldn't say unreasonably angry, but I was pretty mad.
You were surly. Yeah. Surly for sure.
Yes. Surly for sure. Love it. Surly. All right. Let's get to our question.
Yes.
Breakfast cereals. What are they?
Well, breakfast cereals are a category of foods made from the edible seeds of cultivated grasses, processed to varying extents and packaged for relative ease of incorporation into a morning meal. But let's perhaps unpack that sentence a little bit. Cereal is a catch-all word for grains like wheat, oats, barley, rice, and corn. These are the starchy seeds of plants in the wide and weird grass family, and they are pretty useful to humans overall. Cereal grains don't generally require a whole lot of processing to be used, part of why they're so cool, but they are often processed, and in this case, meaning husked, milled or ground, and cooked, in order to create desired flavors and textures in the final product, or to cut down on the consumer's preparation time of the actual meal that they're making. And how fine they are milled or ground and how they're cooked makes a really huge difference. Like, take oats and corn, for example. You can cook these just enough to dry them out, grind them up fairly rough, and then just sell that as oatmeal or grits. And, you know, the consumer may have to cook them further, often into like a hot porridge-type breakfast cereal, or at least rehydrate them, as in the case of muesli. As a manufacturer, you can also par-cook or chemically process the oatmeal or the grits to shorten the consumer's cooking time. Or you can cook them completely, as with a granola, and then mix them with flavorings and additions for a complete, ready-to-eat product. But, you know, so that's a minimalist kind of approach. But one of the super fun things about cereal grains is that those starches that they contain can and will form up into really interesting structures if you treat them right. Exactly how you treat them will depend on what kind of cereal you're making, flaked, shredded, puffed, or extruded. But basically, what you're looking to do is remove the fibrous outer hull or bran of the seed, and then cook up the starchy inner part along with water and any flavorings, sweeteners, colors, and enrichments that you want in the final product. Do all of that in a pressure cooker, giving you a sort of dough that you can then roll out into flakes or kind of comb into long ribbons or shreds or bake up into puffs. You can also push that dough through a number of different heated, high-pressure devices so that when it, like, comes out of the opposite end of this heated, high-pressure tube, that the steam that will be in the dough and the sudden release of pressure from being outside of the tube will make it puff up. And you can use this process to create shapes, too, by forcing the dough through shaped tubes, yeah? Sometimes, like, a blade at the end will cut pieces off as they emerge. And that's the basic process for both gun-puffed and extruded cereals. And it is fascinating and a little bit startling because the pieces tend to, like, shoot out and have to be caught by nets. We talked about this in our Cheetos episode.
Oh, yeah. And that's cool to watch.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Oh, I love it. I could go further into detail, and I suspect we will in the future for very specific cereal treatments, but that's the overview. Yeah. And I will say that advancements in technology, including ways that the dough moves through those pressurized tubes and the use of computers that can control the temperature and pressure, have reduced production time for some of these cereals from as much as 24 hours to as little as 20 minutes.
Wow.
Love it. Science.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
And like Cheetos, you can also add sweet or otherwise flavored coatings after you've created your shapes.
Indeed. Well, speaking of, what about the nutrition?
Oh, gosh. Okay. Mm. All right. Because they are seeds, whole cereal grains are this really cool packet of a strong fiber encasing proteins that would code for creating a plant, and these good fats to help protect it and help it grow, and starches to feed that growing plant. Whole grains are pretty good for you. But the processing of grains into cereals often removes a lot of the things that aren't just starch and adds a lot of salt and sugar. Many ready-to-eat breakfast cereals on the market are enriched, meaning that they have vitamins and minerals added to make them more nutritious and make up for some of those nutrients lost during processing. But these breakfast cereals have come under a lot of scrutiny over the years for exactly how much sugar and salt they contain. And part of the problem here is that sugar isn't just a flavoring, right? Like, it's also a texturing agent and a preservative, which is more important to some formulations than to others. Like corn-based products and flaky products are particularly dependent upon sugar. And when you have sugar, it helps the flavor if you balance it with salt. So it can be like an arms race of stuff that isn't good for you being added into these things. And the loser is your nutrition every time.
Ah!
And of course, like, different cereals sold in different markets to different demographics will contain more or less sugar and salt. And in general, they're the worst in the United States, because why not?
Of course. Of course. Yeah.
Other places are catching up, though. Huzzah. Read your dang labels, people. That's what I'm saying. If you want to know what's in a thing, read the label.
Oh,
it'll tell you.
I guess I also recommend going back to our sugar episode, because—
Yeah.
You get a good primer in that for, I feel like most of us know now, but for a long time, I wasn't really sure how much sugar was an obscene amount. Now I feel pretty confident. Also, because people have called me out for it, and I haven't made a Seinfeld reference in a minute.
Oh.
There is an episode of Seinfeld where Kramer is stopped up, has constipation, and desperately tries to eat bran cereal.
Right.
And it doesn't work. And he says, the bran isn't working for me, Jerry. I think about that line a lot.
That was a pretty decent Kramer. That was, it depends on the what's that, the cadence? Yeah.
Yeah. I also did a gesture that
you did.
I feel encompassed a lot of what he is. I'm working on it. It's on my list of impressions. But all right, what about some numbers?
So breakfast cereal is a big business. As of 2016, the global breakfast cereal market value, including both hot and cold cereals and related bars and biscuits, was some $37 billion.
Whew.
Whew. And of that, cold, ready-to-eat cereals, along with related bars and biscuits, accounted for about 68% of that market.
You know, I used to eat those, like, every day at marching band camp, and then every practice at band camp. So I have a really bad association with them. It's not that I think they taste bad, but you know when you have, like, that memory of...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so just thinking about them makes me like, Oh, no, thank you.
No.
Back in the heat, feeling like I'm going to pass out. All this drama. I don't need that.
Oh, you don't, Annie. It's in the past. You're safe now.
Thank you. Safe from marching band memories.
Yes, well, not the memories. I can't help you with the memories, but you're safe from marching band.
They do lurk around every corner. You're right.
So cold, ready-to-eat breakfast cereal is a fairly American phenomenon, but it has also been picked up intensely in the British Isles. As of 2010, and I couldn't find more recent numbers, or I don't know, like there's some conflicting numbers out there as there are in any kind of market research category, but yeah, as of 2010, Ireland ate the most cereal in the world per capita, like dry cold breakfast cereal, an average of 8.4 kilos per person per year. That's about 18 and a half pounds.
Dang.
At the time, other European countries, though, were averaging like a kilo per person per year or less. So North America still dominated the market as a whole.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah. And that has been changing. Westernization and urbanization have been increasing the number and the varieties of cereals sold around the world over the past couple decades. China and Russia are also now very big markets, like top five, and Asia Pacific is the fastest growing market area.
Hmm.
And globally, it is a growing market. In the U.S., it's been dropping a little bit every year, but globally, it's increasing about 4% per year.
I guess another episode you could re-listen to is breakfast, because I was reading about breakfast is the one meal that's kind of consistently been going down in the U.S. of people who eat it. And so there's just all of this marketing focus. And cereal, I would argue, is just very marketing focused.
Yeah, sure. It is.
And I remember reading a quote, I can't remember from where, but it's like, because breakfast is kind of ritualistic, if somebody chooses your product, then you own their breakfast. There's just this fight for it. And they were saying like fast food restaurants have been putting more and more money into breakfast items because that's where the growth is. And yeah. It's a cutthroat world in the world of breakfast. One of the tops is Cheerios, I suppose. In 2015, the Cheerios brand made about $1 billion in sales.
Ooh, that's billion with a B, folks. Yep.
Billion with a B. They're the best-selling cereal in America. And that includes all of their, you know, Cheerios, Honey Nut Cheerios. But
okay.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah. And in general, breakfast cereals are a high profit item. They rake in a gross margin of like 40 to 45% and a profit margin of 17%, which is comfy. That's real comfy. Note that is after factoring in the costs of marketing cereals, which account for 20 to 25% of the total sales value of the product.
Ooh.
That's a fifth to a quarter of the money that it takes to make cereal going to convincing you to buy it.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of us don't watch commercials anymore, but anytime I turn on like Nickelodeon, you're going to see a cereal commercial.
Yeah.
In like every break, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And the story of how we got to here is fascinating because like you may have noticed that a lot of the marketing is like funny cartoon characters like delivering one-liners. And the rest of it is convincing you how just absolutely stoically healthy these products are. Even if they're flavored with like chocolate or marshmallows or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. And that duality goes back to the very beginning of the cereal story.
It does. It does. And we will get into that history. But first, we're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Let's hit it. Give me a vacation.
Vacation.
Give me a wave.
Surfing.
Give me a city tour.
The trolley.
Give me animals.
The zoo.
Give me some sea life. Give me museums.
Balboa Park.
Give me a woo.
Roller coaster.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your family vacation at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlin, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you. So, of course, people have been cooking cereal grains in various ways and eating them for breakfast for pretty much ever.
Right. And the story of modern breakfast cereal, yes, is really a case of advertising, and particularly health advertising, and changing attitudes around food, health, and breakfast in particular, and perhaps in America in particular.
Yeah, yeah. In brief, to kind of sum up from our graham cracker episode, and if you're very confused about why we're mentioning graham crackers, I'll tell you. So there was this whole like health and morality movement that kicked off in the early to mid 1800s in the United States in particular, that includes but is not limited to the temperance movement, which here in the US is what led to prohibition. There were just a whole bunch of changes going on in society at the time, what with industrialization and urbanization and the changes that those things wrought in how we eat and drink and medicate. Drinking alcohol, and especially distilled alcohol, was on the rise, both for leisure and for medicine. People were spending more time indoors and in polluted environments, and there was a pushback.
Yes.
And one of the people who pushed back here in the United States was one Sylvester Graham.
Duh. That guy.
He was this minister who preached virtue and good health via abstaining from alcohol and tobacco and meat and white bread and via taking in exercise and fresh air and a vegetarian diet. Yes. I mean, he wasn't wrong about those things, but he was a jerk about it, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
because he hated, well, I think like women is part of it, but he mm-hmm. really, but more than women, he hated bread. He hated everything the commercialized, manufactured bread stood for. You know, like contemporary manufacturing processes made it easy to separate the components of whole wheat grains and therefore made it easy to make fluffy, delightful white bread. And so he didn't like that you were removing the good parts of the grains, and he furthermore thought that the only good bread was made by wives and mothers with love and care, which would then lead to a happy digestive system. He wrote in this 1937 thing that he published called Treatise on Bread and Bread Making, he wrote, "Thousands in civic life will, for years, and perhaps as long as they live, eat the most miserable trash that can be imagined in the form of bread."
Whew. Wow. Strong words.
I have strong feelings about bread, and I've never felt that strongly about bread.
No, I don't think so either.
But his alternative to this miserable trash that was bread was products made of what came to be known as gram flour, which is coarse ground whole wheat flour, more like a meal than a flour, really. And it lends itself, therefore, to crackers more than to bread. And his original gram crackers contained no fat and no sugar, pretty different from what we're dealing with today.
Yep, he'd be rolling in his grave if he knew
and what happened. And good on him.
I remember in that episode, I came out so vehemently against this, and I think you less so, but, you know, and we had such a kind listener. I can't remember your name, but if you're still listening, I still remember this. You sent us a shipment of Bob's Mill.
Bob's Red Mill, yes. A whole bunch of their products so that we could make our own graham crackers and kind of like come back to it from like a better place.
Yeah. It made me laugh, and I appreciated it both. So
yes,
thank you if you're still listening.
That stuff was so good. Oh my gosh. Anyway, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes. All right. So moving on to a fellow named James Caleb Jackson. He invented a product he called granula with a U at a sanitarium he ran in New York in 1863, or perhaps his mother invented it. I feel like that's the case throughout most of these stories, is perhaps someone else in the family invented it, but
yeah.
Jackson was a very conservative, very religious vegetarian who created this granula out of dried gram flour that he then broke into shapes, or again, perhaps his mother did. It was so tough, it had to be soaked in milk overnight before it could be eaten. And that's something that stuck around even when the toughness is no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, this was during industrialization when labor was undergoing a really massive upheaval and life was becoming more fast-paced, and cereal offered a more convenient, quicker breakfast option. And it was heavily touted that it was easier to digest. And breakfast mm-hmm. was, like, prior to this, from what I read, this huge meat-heavy meal.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was also simultaneously this rise of, this focus on wellness. And cereal really revolutionized how we saw breakfast here in the United States.
Weird.
Yeah, I know, but it's about to get weirder.
Oh, yeah.
Over at his Battle Creek, Michigan spa, the Battle Creek Sanitarium, surgeon John Harvey Kellogg, made his own version of granula. Originally, he called it granula, but he had to change the name to granola, allegedly after a lawsuit forced him to change the name.
Yeah. Oh, and I wanted to put in here, sanitarium is a word that we've come to associate with like a mental health hospital, mm-hmm. I think, modernly. But at the time, sanitariums focused on both physical and mental health. They were more like retreats than hospitals, really. Yeah.
Yeah. And you do see the word spa used frequently. I think they're more medicinally focused, perhaps, than how we see spas today.
Yes. Neither the word sanitarium nor spa are being used in the way that we think of now.
Yes, exactly.
But think of it somewhere in between. And that's probably yeah. what you've got.
Yes. Oh, the yogurt episode is another one you could check out. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
So many threads here.
Gosh. Oof.
All right. So Kellogg was raised as a Seventh-day Adventist, and he incorporated Adventist beliefs around health into his sanitarium, things like vegetarianism, avoidance of tobacco and alcohol, and a focus on exercise. On top of that, he was really, really, really focused on digestive health. He was a proponent of regular enemas and staying away from fatty, spicy, salty, and greasy foods. And he thought granola would promote digestive wellness. After his first attempt at this, a biscuit led to a patient breaking a tooth. He twice baked a mixture of cornmeal, oats, and flour and then broke them up into smaller pieces. And this was around 1877. Oh, yeah. And he thought granola might prevent people from wanting sex or masturbating, which he believed were bad.
Yeah, yeah. Kellogg bought in on a lot of what Graham and his contemporaries were thinking about all of that sex and masturbation thing. They thought it was bad, like real, like not good for your health at all. And he thought specifically the latter would lead to, as scholar Vern L. Bullough or Bullough. Writes, and get ready to mark list off of your bingo cards, saver listeners, because here we go. Whew. General disability, consumption-like symptoms, premature and defective development, sudden changes in disposition, lassitude, sleeplessness, failure of mental capacity, fickleness, untrustworthiness, love of solitude, bashfulness, unnatural boldness, mock piety, easily being frightened, confusion of ideas, aversion to girls and boys, but a dedicated liking of boys and girls. Round shoulders, weak back and stiffness of joints, paralysis of the lower extremities, unnatural gait, bad posture in bed, lack of breast development in females, capricious appetite, fondness for unnatural or hurtful irritation articles such as salt, pepper, spices, vinegar, mustard, clay, slate, pencils, plaster, and chalk, disgust at simple food, use of tobacco, unnatural paleness, acne or pimples, biting of fingernails, shifty eyes, moist, cold hands, palpitation of the heart, hysteria in females, chlorosis or green sickness, anemia, epileptic fits, bedwetting, and use of obscene words and phrases.
Oh, dear.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, there's some real interesting things on here, but the one that really stood out to me for some reason is disgust at simple foods. Because it's kind of the product he's trying to convince people they need. He was not really selling about it. He wasn't really about selling it, but it's just funny
yeah.
to me. He's like, that's why you don't like this thing that I made.
Yeah, yeah. And so he thought that, you know, eating granola would prevent your sexual desires and therefore prevent all of these ailments.
Yes. According to some things I read, he also recommended tying children's hands behind their backs.
Cool.
So it's a different podcast, but he yep. has a very storied, in many ways, upsetting history, if you want to look that up. But when it comes to this, he was a believer in that. He was a true believer, and he wanted reform of how we ate in this country and how we viewed health. And he that went as far as him handing out recipes for his granola. He did try to, I believe he tried to patent it. But he never succeeded. But he wanted to protect it, but also was willing to share it. However, C.W. Post, one of Kellogg's patients, also riffed on this idea and came up with Grape Nuts, which went on to become the first popular product to run a discount coupon campaign. Yeah, but Kellogg really didn't like this and later accused him of stealing the recipe from his safe. But again, from what I read, he was handing them out. So... I think he just didn't like he was, like, profiting off of it.
Yeah, yeah, because Post set up this rival retreat in Battle Creek called La Vida Inn.
Well, Kellogg wasn't done in the cereal world. He and his brother, Will Keith Kellogg, or W.K. Kellogg, innovated a flaked cereal, or that's one version. Many members of the Kellogg family and employees at his sanitarium also lay claim to inventing the cereal. Mm-hmm. The official story, according to the company's website, puts the date at 1898, when some wheat-based cereal dough was accidentally left out for a decent amount of time, unspecified, and it fermented. The dough was then rolled out into thin flakes that crisped up when baked. The recipe was refined over the years. The dough swapped out for corn dough. Dr. Kellogg called the flakes for eating at a sanitarium, Granose Flakes, with the tagline, "Enrich the blood."
There was this big focus on blood around that time. Other taglines for various products included, "Keeps the blood cool" and "Makes red blood redder."
Sure.
Not sure about it. It sounds like you're marketing to vampires, not to...
It does indeed. Can you imagine you're watching a children's cereal commercial and it's like, keeps their blood cool. All right, but okay. Tired of the treatment he received at the hands of his brother, Will pivoted toward the commercial sector with cornflakes. After purchasing the recipe and founding the Battle Creek Toasted Corn Flake Company in 1906.
And part of this shift to corn was simply because it was cheaper than wheat at the time, as it was largely still considered a food for animals, not people.
And Will got the idea to add sugar, offered the first prize in the box, and started mass marketing. And it worked. By 1909, the company was producing 120,000 cases a day. There were 100 cereal companies in Battle Creek alone by 1903.
I love this.
Just in this one area.
Yeah.
Ah, I see you. I'm going to do it too, but I'll do it better. And just I'll multiply. Perhaps not surprisingly, Dr. Kellogg really didn't approve of this. He objected to the addition of sugar, which he viewed as a vice. And he took his brother to court over the use of the family name. However, the court ruled in Will's favor in 1920, and Will renamed the company the Kellogg Company in 1925. Around the same time, Post debuted their product Elijah's Manna, but after some protests by religious groups, they renamed it to Post Toasties. Yes.
That's quite a turn, and I love it.
Yes. And grape nuts, when they came out in 1897, they came with the promise of curing all kinds of things, including malaria and alcoholism.
Yeah. A Post once said, the sunshine that makes a business plant grow is advertising.
Wow.
And the company went all in on that. One advertising tract that they printed was titled The Road to Wellville. By 1903, dude was making $1 million a year.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. It's funny, too, because to this day, I have an association that grape nuts are the, like, healthier.
Yeah, me too.
Cereals. Don't know if that's any truth to it, but I have the association.
They are low in sugar, and from what I recall from being a child, they taste like dirt. So,
so take that, grape nuts. Post also purchased the exclusive rights to the production of the cereal rolling machine needed for the process being used at the time, a product that Will Kellogg originally had a hand in designing. This, again, cutthroat world here, cereal. Jumping to a different continent for a second, in the early 1900s, Swiss Dr. Maximilian Bircher Benner came up with a mixture of uncooked oats, dried fruits, and nuts originally served with orange juice, but later milk, called muesli. He got the inspiration for this from a dish he had while traveling, so it existed in some form before this, and probably could be its own episode. Muesli was documented in the UK by 1926, and its popularity really took off in the 1960s. Before that, it was sort of seen as this fringe alternative health food. And I have to say, I had muesli a lot when I was in Australia, and I loved it.
Oh, sure. Big fan. It's great.
Mm-hmm. By the 1910s, Quaker Oats Company introduced puffed rice and puffed wheat after they acquired a technique that caused grains of rice to explode under pressure. They marketed it as this amazing scientific innovation, touting it as the first, quote, food shot from guns and, quote, the eighth wonder of the world.
Americans and their guns, y'all.
Even cereal. Even cereal. Mm-hmm.
In the 1920s, some of the very earliest radio programs aired sponsorships from Kellogg's.
Also in the 1920s, an accident led to the creation of Wheaties when a health clinician knocked over some wheat bran onto a hot stove. By the 1930s, their slogan, Breakfast of Champions, was being used in marketing materials, first on a billboard for a minor league baseball team in Minnesota. Rice Krispies entered the scene soon after that.
Yeah, and in 1931, Snap, Crackle, and Pop were designed by this this cartoonist by the name of Vernon Grant, or artist Vernon Grant. And they would go on to become the first cartoon marketing characters for cereal, for Rice Krispies. And supposedly, Grant's work largely influenced none other than Walt Disney.
Wow. I mean, I still remember those characters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're still around. also in the 1930s, Kellogg's opened its first British manufacturing plant in Manchester to create the then already popular in the area cornflakes and other products.
Perhaps the first iteration of Wheat Chex, called Shredded Ralston, was invented by Ralston Purina Company in the 1930s. And this product was intended for followers of Ralstonism, which was a social movement entrenched with racism that also believed in mind control. It wasn't until the 1950s and a rice version that the name Chex showed up. In the 1940s, Cheerios made their way to shelves, but they were soon renamed Cheerios. Grape Nuts introduced the Eat a Good Breakfast, Do a Better Job campaign in 1944. As a part of this, shoppers received pamphlets espousing the health benefits of breakfast, and radio announcers declared, "Nutrition experts say breakfast is the most important meal of the day." We've all heard it.
Yeah.
Grape Nuts.
That's where it comes from. Thanks, Grape Nuts. Ironically, the 1940s is also when we saw the introduction of sugary coatings on cereals, on Post's cereals specifically. And during this time, Tony the Tiger debuted and Post licensed Mickey Mouse for use on its cereal boxes.
Several things happened that changed the cereal world after World War II in the 1950s that led to an increase in consumption. First, there was a push for sugar and sugared products. Second, the advent of television in American households and the commercials that came with that.
Yeah, legend has it that in 1949, the then chair of Kellogg's met ad man Leo Burnett on a train by total chance. And their relationship just absolutely changed both television and advertising, and like cereal advertising in particular, as we know it.
I feel like we've talked about him before. Well, in either case, Kellogg and Tony the Tiger was in some of these very early television commercials for cereal. And yeah, the first of many advertised animated cereal mascots to come. This decade also gave us Corn Pops and Trix. If you go into the 60s, Quaker debuted products like Cap'n Crunch and a now discontinued product called Quake. That featured a series of commercials depicting battles between an alien named Quisp and a miner named Quake. both of these products were essentially sweetened corn and oat dough molded into shapes. However, one of the reasons I wanted to bring this up is in 1969, the FCC decreed that children's cartoon characters could not give marketing messaging during the show itself.
Relegating it to commercials only. And there was a lot of scrutiny around products marketed to children at the time. In 1970, an advisor on nutrition to then-President Nixon testified to Congress that rats fed cereals these sugary breakfast cereals, those rats were less healthy than other rats that he fed ground-up paperboard cereal boxes if that paperboard was mixed with milk, sugar, and raisins.
I have a lot of questions. what was President Nixon doing here? Why did he have all these rats?
It wasn't Nixon. It was his advisor who did the testifying and the hypothetical experimentation.
I see.
Not Nixon himself.
You did say that. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. I still am
I like where you took it, though. I like that.
Oh, geez. I was just imagining him in the Oval Office, like, eat these cardboard rats. Oh, man. That was an opportunity to try a Nixon impression. I really didn't do it. But I work on that.
Cool.
I think that's one I can manage. also, in the 70s, we see just this whole smorgasbord of fruity, monster-based cereals, like Frankenberry and Boo Berry, which was a Halloween product that I really didn't know that was the case.
Yeah, I think it's seasonal. These days, anyway, it's seasonal. Oh. I don't know. Anyway.
Interesting. Count Chocula was also in this decade. Also non-monster varieties like Fruity Pebbles and Cocoa Pebbles. And all of this was happening as granola's commercial sales were on the rise. And the Federal Trade Commission was, yes, scrutinizing the marketing tactics of these products when it came to children. Honey Nut Cheerios debuted in 1979. Ooh, in the 70s, we had these monster and fruit-based cereals. But the 80s was all about these tie-ins and co-branding, like having Mr. T as a spokesperson for Mr. T-shaped cereal. And then you had things like Smurf Berry Crunch and the California Raisins for Post Raisin Bran.
The California Raisins have always creeped me out.
Yeah.
Claymation in general really creeps me out.
Mm.
And I just don't, I don't know. I don't know, man. They move wrong. It's not cool.
I remember a listener sent us a clip for commercial from that, and I was highly disturbed. So I'm on the same train. And as a kid, my brother loved Gumby, but I couldn't watch it. It disturbed me so much.
Oh yeah, yeah, Gumby too. All right. This is a different show.
Yes. Yes.
But speaking of disturbing, in the 1990s, Neil Gaiman wrote a serial convention into his comic book Sandman. And yes, cereal was a pun. Mm-hmm. No one was there to talk about cereal. They were serial killers.
Of course.
That's what was up. Yeah. and in topical pun news, but much later, London had a pair of serial killer cafes, C-E-R-E-A-L, killer cafes, from 2014 through 2020. These kind of like 90s-themed sweet nostalgia joints that collectively sold over 1 million bowls of cereal before going online this year in response to COVID-19. And nostalgia really did become a focus of the market and the post-market in the 2000s. A fellow who we mentioned in our molecular gastronomy episode, Ferran Adrea, made what he called Kellogg's Paella at El Bulli. This was a reduced seafood broth over Rice Krispies.
Oh.
There's the Momofuku offshoot milk bar that has ice creams made from dairy steeped in cereals. There are vodkas flavored like Fruit Loops. They really taste like Fruit Loops, if that's what you're into.
I've had the Momofuku. I think they have like milk, cereal milk flavored something. I've had it. It was good. I liked it.
Oh, well, cool.
I can give that review.
I read in one place ice creams, but then I felt like it was something else somewhere else. Anyway, in 1998, kind of running along that theme, Kellogg's opened a museum or like a roadside attraction in Battle Creek called Cereal City USA. This followed the company shutting down tours of its nearby real production facility due to fears of rivals stealing trade secrets.
Ooh, intrigue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Slugworth in there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The attraction was set up to look like a 20th century factory and told the story of cereal's creation. Visitors could also tour Battle Creek from a little go-kart train. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Meet the mascots, of course, sample some cereals. But it closed in 2007 due to low attendance. Yeah.
Oh, well, if anyone happened to go before then, let us know.
Yeah, if you've got photographs or memorabilia or just memories, absolutely let us know.
Yes. Puffins was introduced by a small Northern California natural foods bakery in the 1990s. And this molasses sweetened corn cereal, they really rode the wave, the rising wave of organic and a desire for healthier cereal alternatives. And I have to say, I've had them and I really enjoyed them. I can't speak to those things, but I liked them. The trend of natural and organic foods continued into the 2000s. The acquisition of Kashi by Kellogg's really exemplifies that. Mm-hmm. As part of this, there's been this continued conversation around marketing towards kids and accurate labeling, sugar.
The changes in nutrition labeling laws, specifically in the UK and the US, I can speak to, but I'm pretty sure it's been happening the world over the past couple decades, have resulted in further scrutiny of breakfast cereals. And then in 2016, breakfast cereals were labeled a thing what millennials are killing.
Ah, another thing.
Yeah, there is this market survey where these lazy millennials reported that it's inconvenient to eat breakfast cereals because you have to clean up afterwards.
Yeah. It's true.
And I will remind you that even in 2016, like, millennials were already like 34 years old. So I'm not sure.
Right.
This is a thing that bothers me all the time. It's fine. It's fine. But over the past couple decades, a lot of new development has indeed been focused on repackaging cereal into bars or whatever for on-the-go eating to appeal to us tricksy millennials who are killing everything.
Yeah. You know, it's a big plot. We're all in on it. And you're just going to have to innovate. To keep up.
Yep.
That's
it. Yep. Sorry, not sorry.
That's right. That's right. Oh, I do. I'm going to go look up after this a picture of all the mascots together. And I think we should just have a food mascot horror comic. I feel it. I feel pretty confident in it, actually.
We were saying before we started recording that, like, we didn't even go that deep on the mascots.
Yeah.
And it could be like a whole other, like, we could just have a whole episode of like these cereal mascots and their like backstories as they are and how weird they are.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember it being a large topic of conversation when I was in school, that how mean the kids were to the Trix rabbit. Because they wouldn't share the tricks. So I bet he sits at home at night and the lights are off and he's just plotting like, oh, one day those kids will pay.
Oh, no. All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Put that in the back burner.
All right. Well, cool.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we'd love to hear ideas from listeners about this. Any thoughts you have? And speaking of, we do have some listener mail.
We do, but first we've got one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
This is Amy Brown from 4 Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually
in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that Healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with the Snorri. I try to do this 90s commercials. They're so in your face. We've talked about them before, like the skateboarding and the bright zigzagging colors.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Lots of vocal fry. Lots of, like, kind of like dovetailing with the whole, like, extreme sports kind of thing.
They're kind of yelling at you, to be honest.
Yeah. There was a lot of yelling in the 90s.
There was. If anyone hasn't seen a 90s kids commercial, go look it up. You will be shocked.
It's high energy.
High energy is a good way to describe it. Okay, so to preface these letters, I love how many people have been emailing about salt and pepper shakers.
Yes.
And also specifically the one that Lauren mentioned. It's fantastic. So Sarah wrote, I will say I was excited immediately when the episode on salt and pepper shaker episode showed up in my podcast feed. My mom is a collector of salt and pepper shakers. For any given family meal where we are sitting at the dining room table, there is at least 2 sets on the table. For holidays, at least 4 or more sets to make an appearance.
What? Yeah. That's beautiful.
A common gift for my mom is salt and pepper shakers. The salt and pepper shakers are all displayed prominently in the china cabinet. Highlights include the creepy snowy owl salt and pepper shakers that belonged to my great-grandmother. I think. The silver ones that were one of my mom's friend's family members. Her friend knew she would appreciate them. And my personal favorite, the humping turtles that my sister's then boyfriend, now husband, bought for my mom on a trip to Florida. I mean, those are pretty fantastic.
Humping turtles. Yeah. Not having seen your mother's full collection, I'm going to say that those have to be standouts.
Yes. Yes.
Good choices. Oh, yeah. And Michael wrote, I listened to your podcast on salt and pepper shakers and wanted to share the story of my great-granny's salt and pepper shakers. She had something like 45 to 50 sets, and my mother was said to inherit them upon her mother's passing. Needless to say, throughout the years, pairs were taken and or broken by other family members, and my mother only received 12 or so sets. My mother also received a photo album, and behind a middle school picture of my mother was a black and white photo of the salt and pepper collection. Over the years, thanks to the picture and eBay, I have been able to replace almost all of the salt and pepper shakers, and now my mom has almost 80 sets. My personal favorites are the donkey figure, where the saddlebags are the salt and pepper shaker, and the poodle figure, where the six puppies that hang off the side are shakers.
Ingenuity. It's so impressive.
You know, it's that's the thing. It's such a simple thing, but there are endless ways to create it.
Yeah. It just feels like this kind of doofy, and I say that in the most loving way.
Mm-hmm.
Like doofy.
We like doofy here.
Oh, yeah, but like putting this thought and effort and care into this. I love it. I love it.
Like a condiment shaker. It's so good.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. That's beautiful.
Yes, I love that you helped recreate the collection with mm-hmm. The help of a photo she must have taken.
Yeah.
Of it.
Oh gosh, I love all of the enabling, all of the like loving enabling that goes on in these stories about salt and pepper shakers.
Me too. So please keep sending those in our
yes.
way. You can email us at hello@favoritepod.com. And thanks to those listeners for emailing us.
Yes. You can also get in touch via social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SavorPod. And we do hope to hear from you. Savor is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks as always to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard, who waited patiently for the entire second half of the episode to break in when we took our listener mail break, talking about how terrible of a dude Kellogg is.
Yes, it was top notch.
Was. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.